This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
What is the difference between mere life and the good life? Aristotle once said, "The good life is a life informed by the principles that express our highest ideals, life as we would like to live it."
The good life is an education that rattles and decenters.
Relationships, sustenance, and aspirations.
A life of reflection and agency in concert with others in pursuit of collective well-being.
The good life needs to equate instead with a healthier public life.
Pursuing knowledge, cultivating friendship, preserving freedom, satisfying needs.
The good life is having a language to express your deepest thoughts, emotion, and belief.
The good life is when students' eyes light up at the realization that their engineering work will improve other people's lives.
Stay with us as some of UC San Diego's finest scholars share their pursuit of the good life.
Welcome to UC San Diego. Welcome to the Great Hall of International House. And welcome to this, the Making of the Modern World lecture series, our theme this year, The Good Life. The purpose of the series is very simple. It is to share with you, with members of the community, with alumni, with faculty, with members of the staff, to share with you some of our greatest treasures, and those are our faculty. It's especially appropriate because these are treasured faculty because of their ability to communicate, to teach, to educate. And our theme tonight is education, and so it is a special treasure to have tonight's speaker, who will be introduced in just a moment by my colleague Stephen Cassidy, speak to you about learning and education and the vision and mission that guides us here at UC San Diego. At this moment, I'd like to introduce Stephen Cassidy, a professor of comparative literature and also an assistant dean of graduate studies, who will be introducing our guest speaker for tonight.
Thank you, Alan, and thank you all for coming. It's a great pleasure to introduce to you this evening one of my favorite people at UCSD, actually one of my favorite people in the world, Gabriela Wienhausen. You know, at major research universities like this one, faculty members often get a rap, I hope largely undeserved, for being focused on their research to the exclusion of their teaching. And despite that rap, many faculty members really do care about their teaching, and some of them are actually pretty good at it, too. But very few of them focus on teaching as the object of their activities and their research. And that's where Dr. Wienhausen comes in. The stock phrase that you're supposed to use for somebody like this is it's the word fiercely with devoted, fiercely devoted to these activities. If the word can be used with an entirely favorable sense, I would say that Dr. Wienhausen is ferociously devoted to her teaching and to her focus on teaching as well. She is currently Associate Dean for Education in the Division of Biological Sciences. She's been at UCSD since 1981, and as Associate Dean, she oversees undergraduate and graduate educational programs in that division. Her topic tonight is College as a Shake Table, Why Rattled Students Are Better Prepared for the Good Life. Please join me in welcoming to the podium Dr. Gabriela Wienhausen.
Thank you all very much for the warm welcome. And Steve, thank you. And I'm very honored to be here, and I'm very much looking forward to talking to you. So the title, you see this, College as a Shake Table, Why Rattled Students Are Better Prepared for the Good Life. So what I actually would like to start with is a reminder of something that you have heard several times each time you were here. And that's the reminder of Aristotle and how he distinguished mere life from good life. And just as a reminder, mere life involves fulfillment of necessities like food and shelter. And the good life, on the other hand, involves thoughts and deeds, ideas and actions that express our highest ideals, life as we would like to live it. So you have heard this several times. And so now the question is, in this context, what does a good college education mean? And would a good college education prepare our students for a good life? The answers to these questions, in order to answer this, let's first explore how a good college education differs from a mere one. For me, mere means going to college as a prerequisite to get a job, or being admissible to medical school, grad school, law school, and the like. In other words, it means caring merely about good grades and academic honors, being merely satisfied with surviving college, or merely striving to get a marketable degree. Thus, mere college education really only focuses on external validation. A good college education fosters the joy of finding connections and thus discovering meaning, thinking about the implication and application of what has been learned, developing new concepts and imagining possibilities and probabilities. It facilitates embracing complexity and searching for the depth of meaning in everything being learned, nurturing, maybe igniting for the first time, an internal desire to learn for the sake of learning. It supports the student to create, grow, and remain curious and ask how and why beyond the confines of what is required. Thus, in the context of seeking a good life, good education is seeking education for the sake of developing one's mind. So a good education will thus be a life where learning remains an adventure, where the mind continues to grow and create, and where there is minimal fear of making mistakes, where there is a lasting desire to be challenged intellectually, personally, and emotionally, and where each person adds to his or her personal knowledge through sharing with others in the context of a community. So over the course of the talk, I will explore how good education can be brought about and why I believe it builds the foundation for leading a good life. So how can good education be fostered? Before we explore this, we need to step back one more time and reflect about the meaning education, the word. And what I did is, something that many of us do, I consulted the Merriam-Webster, and it was actually really a good idea because there were three definitions, and these definitions provided three different perspectives. So there was the first one that says, education is the knowledge, skill, and understanding that you get from attending a school, college, university, and so forth. So this definition is from the perspective of the student. And then education is the action or process of teaching someone, especially in a school, college, university. So clearly this definition is from the perspective of the teacher. And then there's a third one that means that education is a field of study that deals with the methods and problems of teaching. And thus, this definition is from the perspective of the researcher. I pointed out these different perspectives to highlight the need to unpack a term that seems to be so familiar to all of us, to make sure that we really dig deeper, just as we're asking our students to do. Clearly, and again, when you look at this, learning, hence education, is social. And it manifests itself as interactions between people, student and teacher, students and students, and teacher and students. Thus, thinking about good education also demands thinking about teaching and understanding how mere teaching and good teaching differs. So, what is good teaching? Good teaching demands that I reflect on my role as a teacher and ask the question, do I view teaching as imparting information and transmitting structured knowledge? Or do I see it more broadly as an interaction with my students, thus facilitates understanding and brings about intellectual development? Good teaching requires knowing what I want my students to learn, but more importantly, how I want to change my students' learning experience, intellectually, emotionally, and personally. So in good teaching, my role helps students discover what it means to learn. I must facilitate discovery of the learning process through participation and continuing to learn along with my students. Thus, good teaching forces me, the educator, to create learning environments with the power to move students away from extrinsic motivation, such as good grades, to intrinsic motivation, such as seeking and finding deep meaning in learning. In this way, I can provoke students' transformation into a lifelong problem solver, responsible, self-confident, creative, compassionate, truly a person with a foundation for good life. So how does one begin to create these learning environments that facilitate good education? I think you will all agree that most of us, maybe all of us, are creatures of habit in the way we think and act. We like to stay in our comfort zone of what we know, the intellectual and also personal equivalent of being flesh frozen. Yes, I need to create, therefore, a learning environment for teaching that can strip away ingrained habits of the mind. And I think you all will agree again that for most of us, making significant change intellectually and personally requires an external impetus. In effect, that means our comfortable worldview must be rattled. And it must be rattled of sufficient intensity to prompt a willingness to change. So what do I mean by learning environments that rattle? Simply put, an educator must develop circumstances and environments that shake students up and challenge their notion of learning. Good education requires a learning environment that, although physically safe, provokes intellectual and personal discomfort. Fundamentally, those environments have three principles in common. First of all, the approach to teaching is different. They asked what we want students to do intellectually rather than what they should learn. The approach to learning is different. Instead of allowing students to passively consume, they expect students to take personal responsibility for their learning. And last, but absolutely not least, they take full advantage of the plethora of opportunities, academic, artistic, interpersonal, present on campus, and thus involving what traditionally would be unlikely partners. And so I will explain or describe now three examples that rattled students and teachers out of their comfort zone and produced unique learning environments here at UC San Diego. So example number one. I know that you are all waiting, right? There's just an empty slide. So I will first set up the context so that you understand the problem. For years, student surveys identified UC San Diego's lack of a sense of community as a major deficiency in their overall college experience. Students characterized the campus as being merely a space, a physical, geographical location, inauthentic, generic, unfriendly, isolating. What could we do about it? By chance, several of us interested in the problem ended up in the same, fortunately, very long coffee line. So it was Marty Wallison, who was then director of Art Power. It was Allison Green, who was then the chair of the Department of Theater and Dance. We also had a few undergraduates. And me, then provost of Sixth College. And as predictable, the problem elicited first a collective sigh. This is an impossible problem to solve. And then the conversation evolved. And then Marty brought up the urban bush women. Have you ever heard of them? The Urban Bush Women are a Brooklyn-based dance ensemble that explores the idea of community. And in addition to performing, they use the process of creating a dance performance as a forum to help people and communities make sense of the world and prepare themselves to take action in it. With this intent, we formulated what at the time seemed like an impossible and improbable idea. Could we design a course that would explore the no community issue with the urban bushwomen? We realized quickly that we already had the platform we needed. All six college students have to do a practicum, which is a community-based project course. So we could then partner with the urban bushwomen within the context of the Sixth College practicum and explore and deeply understand the no community problem, and furthermore, develop and work towards developing solutions. And the idea morphed into a unique collaboration and unlikely alliance. We created a two-quarter-long, four-credit course, which we called Place Matters. And it was co-taught by Grace Jun, then a faculty member from Theater and Dance, and by me in partnership with the Urban Bush Women. And very importantly, the course had an explicit outcome, a public dance performance. So how did we begin this complex intellectual challenge to teaching and learning? So first of all, the course did not start in the usual, as students expected it, way, which is with an overview by a faculty to the discipline, introducing and explaining the relevant theory and concepts to students, and then textbook exercises, and maybe eventually real-world applications. Rather, it started with a little rattle. Why do you want to take this course? Why are you interested in UC San Diego's sense of community, or rather the lack of it? How do you feel about the problem? In other words, we ask the students to struggle with the problem on a very personal level. And we agreed that we must understand UC San Diego's historical context from multiple dimensions: politically, culturally, academically, artistically, personally. And so we agreed that we had to explore this by using different numerous academic disciplines. Through the lenses of social sciences, we ask questions such as, why and by whom was UC San Diego founded? What were the political circumstances and the driving forces? How did the town and gown communities interact? What has been the impact of the university on surrounding communities? We learned from the arts and humanities when asking questions such as, what is a university? How do universities build identity? How much of a school's identity is bound up with its academic achievements? And what else may account for that identity? How does a school's material identity advance its intellectual mission? And yes, we also consulted the natural sciences. Where in the geological and biological world is UC San Diego positioned? How has the natural environment affected the development of UC San Diego and been changed as a result of the university's presence? We agreed that the meaning of community is complex, requiring exploration via various perspective and academic lenses. How do sociologists, anthropologists, biologists, artists, and historians define community? How is community experienced by faculty, students, staff, alum, and the community members, past and present? So gradually and systematically, as a group, we wrenched ourselves from a familiar, comfortable, intellectual, and personal place. And then more serious rattling, a bigger shake. We asked students about their reaction when they realized that the course would be co-taught by a biochemist and a choreographer. At first glance, and even at second and third glance, neither one of us appeared to have credentials for teaching this type of class, right? So we explored ideas of what does having credentials mean? What does being an expert mean? Does it mean possessing knowledge? Is knowledge a discrete entity that upon acquisition one owns, unchanged, to be recalled and applied when appropriate? So once an expert, always an expert? How can that be true if expertise can become outdated? So then, having knowledge, factual and procedural knowledge, does not, by definition, make a person an expert? Discussions, questions, more discussions, and first, tentatively, and then more firmly, we developed a shared understanding. A person gains expertise by engaging in a process that includes researching facts, learning new skills, acquiring conceptual understanding, and establishing meaning through connection, integration, and synthesis. Finally, comprehension. In our course, in this learning environment, the students drive the process of seeking expertise, including receiving instruction from the teachers and other experts, other faculty, community members, and even their peers. So the process is iterative. The students are expected to gather and share knowledge, receive feedback from the teacher, from the peers, be challenged to explore deeper and do more work, share and receive feedback. Learning and teaching as an iterative process. Still more rattling. We talked about expectations. The quest to comprehend community had to occur on a very personal, concrete, and immediate level. This required accepting the course not as an entity that merely required engagement of the mind, a very comfortable idea. The course itself was also a setting to explore and apply community and explore values such as trust, respect, commitment. And concretely, trust meant daring to open up, to share personal history and accepting each other without judging. Respect meant being intellectually honest and taking a rigorous approach to research. The quality of my work is directly linked to the ability of my peers to learn. And commitment meant not flaking out of the second quarter of the sequence. Each one of us was essential for delivering the final course product. Rattled enough? Not quite. We needed to translate our academic work and personal stories into a different language. A language whose elements are space, time, force. Yes, we were expected to express concepts and thoughts via dance movements and ultimately create a dance story and further a public performance. So how do you translate thoughts into movements, especially for the non-dancers among us? Let me tell you how this came about for me. Remember the explicit goals of the course was to get to know each other on a personal level? This included sharing where we grew up, the country, the landscape, the climate, the community, the family. Grace Jun, the faculty member from Theater and Dance, challenged us to describe our origins in few pithy terms and then translate those expressions into cohesive movements. We had 10 minutes to do that. And I mean we. So my description: I'm coming from gray-blue, leaky skies that touch musky brown soil, rich with potatoes, and that embrace me and my many noisy siblings. Our assignment was to say this out loud, so far so good, in front of the whole class. I passed. But now we had to convey this description into movements. Now I was rattled too, big time. My clumsiness made me literally freeze. But then I did it. I actually had an idea how to move. I stepped forward, reached out high, my hands open to grab the imaginary leaky gray-blue skies, and then I bent my body over my right knee while in a sweeping movement, bringing my hands down to the floor, the musky brown soil rich with potatoes, and I finally jumped up to my feet as energetically as I could to embrace my many noisy siblings while making a quick turn to wrap up all of us into the leaky gray blue sky. It wasn't graceful, I can assure you this. It was also probably not great art. But doing this intellectual exercise combined with expressing it with my body caused something to happen to me. I experienced an amazing, wonderful feeling of having gone beyond my limits. And it was at once exhilarating, humbling, and liberating. I know I wasn't the only one rattled by this experience, in a good way. I just skipped the important part so that you know I actually did it. So this was the first step of getting comfortable with our thoughts, bodies, and relationships to create a public performance piece. An anecdote, which I think is really important. First day of class, one of the students clearly didn't want to be there, sitting as far away from the group as possible. Arms crossed, avoiding eye contact, very angry demeanor. And I quietly moved closer to her, introduced myself, and as gently as I could, asked her, you know, why are you here? And this will be a really great class. And she just looked at me, said, I'm looking for a class to fulfill my practicum requirement. A couple of weeks later, her answer to the challenge to describe her home, row after row, walled-in cookie-cutter palaces, housing lonely children raised by nannies under a relentlessly blue sky. As these phrases conveyed, she grew up as a single child of high-power professional parents in a gated community somewhere in Orange County. Next, some things started to change for the student. When we did the exercise called asset mapping, we learned that she had taken ballet lessons and knew something about dance. And we asked her, no, we begged her, to share her expertise and help us unwashed to learn how to move or to dance. And indeed, she became one of the key organizers of the performance. And she scheduled extra practice sessions, and she made sure we showed up, including me. And she encouraged and provided meaningful feedback, and she came to hug us when we did things well. And in a very, very personal moment, and very touching moment, she shared with all of us that she had never understood and experienced community before she took Place Matters. The course did rattle and transform her. This young woman was a prototypical example of how we learn to develop and embrace the principles of community through the process of studying the topic. So what did Place Matters teach us? Where to begin? There was really a lot. And believe me, intellectually and academically, we learned a lot and we were rattled. And we learned many important concepts, such as historical context matters. A place is a space that has become humanized, rich with emotional and personal significance. But we had epiphanies that really changed our minds, and thus building the foundation for a good life. Joining a community is a process of becoming aware of the values, leadership, and history of the community and finding a valuable role to play in it. We learned that knowledge is constantly evolving and reasoned through objective and subjective means. Being an expert is not a static condition, but a continuous process of thinking, learning, and knowing. Personally, we were rattled. Building community occurs by putting community values into practice and ensuring that all who participate feel recognized for their contributions. Being a natural at something is a complete myth. We all worked hard to achieve, academically, intellectually, artistically. Taking a critical approach to an important issue, exploring it from many different academic, artistic, human, personal angles amazes, surprises, frustrates, excites, and thus brings true joy. The diversity of ideas from those with different personal experiences, from different environments and backgrounds, opened new pathways of original thought. In short, good education happened. Students were presented with a problem and they learned the course material in the context of addressing the problem and trying to come up with a solution. They experienced imagination, creativity as a process, not limited to the arts. They were nudged out of their cognitive, personal, and physical comfort zone over and over again, enough so to fully experience and get hooked on learning as an adventure in the quest for a good life. And you see, one of the student comments, I wish all classes were like this. You experience so much, you grow so much. Because of this class, I interact more with the campus community. I feel like I'm making a greater impact. Now we wanted to rattle a little farther away from home. And the impetus for creating this, there were three different reasons for doing this. When going out into the real world, our students are expected to be professionals, able to interact, to build, design, create effectively with people of widely varying social and educational backgrounds. They are also expected to work with people from many different disciplines. And furthermore, and the second educational challenge evolved slowly as an expansion of the first, employers are clamoring for students who can achieve within a global context. So we wanted to find a way to bring the world to the students, to increase their global awareness and competence, and if possible, without necessarily requiring them to leave the campus. And last but not least, as much suffering as we endured here in Southern California during the recent recession, our needs pale in comparison to those in many places in the developing world. So we wanted students to grapple with those needs, to develop the strength, not to shy away from that level of suffering. So this time, the guidance, the epiphany for how to address this challenge of providing a good education came from an inspiring example at Purdue University, the Engineering Projects in Community Service. It is a program that allows teams of undergraduates from a variety of majors to design, build, and deploy real engineering-based systems to solve concrete problems for local community services and educational organizations. And applying this concept, Gene Ferrante and Charles Tu and I established in 2004 Teams in Engineering Services, TIES, which under its current leader, and fortunately she is somewhere here in the audience, there she is, the amazing Mandy Breton. She is currently the director of what became Global TIES under her leadership. So in Global TIES, students in multidisciplinary teams design appropriate and sustainable solutions for nonprofit organizations, either here in San Diego or in the developing world. And the students do this in addressing needs in four broad areas: human services, access and ability, education and outreach, and the environment. And Global TIES subscribes to what is called the human-centered design model. So for students to be successful, they need to learn all they can about the context, the community, the organization, the culture, and the people for whom they are designing. So for students to learn about the political, social, and cultural context, the geographical and biological environment in which their partners live, Global TIES takes advantage of the local opportunities. Faculty experts from many different fields, films, news programs, and working with UC San Diego's international center and its resources. And of course, technology allows students to interact with their community partners even if they are thousands of miles away. A foundational course introduces students to the principles of collaborative engineering. And just as described in Place Matters, the foundational course encourages students to step back. And the course starts with the question, why are you taking this course? What is your intention? What is your reason to be here? What's your point? So again, the goal is that the students recognize the mutuality of the experience, the fact that they are likely to gain more from this than their clients. And then after taking the course, the students join a team, 8 to 18 students, to work on multi-year projects under the guidance of a faculty advisor. So what I will show you now is one example, and I will not talk to you about this. I will let the students talk about this, and so there is a small video.
Global TIES is a humanitarian engineering program that puts multidisciplinary teams of undergraduates to work, building the dreams of NGOs in San Diego and in developing countries around the world. In the One Village Philippines project, we are working to meet the needs of Bagong Silong by providing the community's residents with sustainable and affordable technology.
Because the Philippines lie in a typhoon-prone location, the structure sub-team is working to design a roof that can withstand the high-force winds that have already destroyed so many homes. We aim to use low-cost, sustainable, and local materials to achieve this goal.
We are working to alleviate the energy cost of the villages by researching environmentally friendly energy sources. Currently, we are developing a portable device that converts wind power into electrical energy. Ultimately, this device will be used to power small appliances such as light bulbs, radios, and cell phones. While this technology can be utilized in everyday life, it becomes more essential in disaster situations when electricity is unavailable.
This is Kyle Wilson reporting, the One Village Philippines team, representing Global Ties.
Oh yeah! Oh yeah.
On the road!
Those field experiences are truly transformative. You can imagine that they raise awareness and build skills in a way that learning back here at home cannot. The limited funding for Global Ties allows only a few students to actually, what Mandy calls, put sneakers on the ground overseas, but everyone develops a deeper and more nuanced understanding of the world, even if they do not get to travel abroad. And I want to introduce you to a young lady here. She is on the right side. You see the corner here, Lila Orr. And I'm, of course, extremely proud to tell you that she is a biology major. And it's really important for you to understand that Global Ties is involving students from many, many different majors. So she is a biology major, and she actually was the team leader for this project. I don't know if you remember, but she was on the plane, and she flew there, and she organized this event. So here's also a quote of hers that I would like to share.
As a future scientist, I feel it is part of my purpose to know as much as I reasonably can about something and take that to unexplored territory where I can use it to make a difference.
I have one that I would like to read to you. I learned the difference between grounded and random improvisation. Both are necessary at times and respectable in their own way, but it is incredibly valuable to keep method to madness. We didn't really know what we were doing, but there is a difference between us trying our best after a year of narrow study and construction volunteers putting rebar between bricks instead of through them. That takes very little additional effort, and from what I hear and assume, has a huge payoff. Foresight is not always possible, but we have to do our best to know the consequences of our actions before investing in them. So again, in this example, students working through a real-world problem, which could only be solved through a multidisciplinary team effort. Students were challenged to apply what they knew and learn, and then they had to learn what they needed to learn. Here are some more quotes. I learned a lot about my team and was thrilled with everything I discovered. The team makes the project. No matter how invested we are in our work, we are far more efficient when we are equally invested in each other. The ability to improvise will be very valuable in any career. Creativity in a practical sense comes down to the ability to solve problems in new ways with limited resources. And yes, I know I have been living in a bubble. Through global ties, I have been able to understand better the perspective of others because I have to consider the cultural background and environment behind the choices they make, they, the clients. It has made me more aware of the big picture, whereas I usually tend to focus on details. In their own words, students described the process of becoming an expert. Remember, which we described earlier as one gains expertise by engaging in the process that includes researching facts and learning new skills, acquiring conceptual understanding, and so forth. In other words, good education happened. And students were part of an experience that fostered the joy of finding connections, thinking about the implications and applications of what had been learned and developed new concepts and imagining possibilities and probabilities and learning that there is usually more than one way to reach the result. And they also came to recognize the mutuality of the experience, the fact that they have gained more from the experience than their clients. And that is a gift. And when I listen to the quotes, I also hear that the students feel at once more confident and more humble and more in awe. So as educators, I believe we reached our goal if rattling does two things. Making a person intellectually aware that seeking out rattles, opportunities to feel stretched, uncomfortable, out of one's comfort zone, brings joy and satisfaction. And if rattling is giving a person the courage to be rattled again, in fact, it should give him or her the desire to pursue more rattling because the experience can be so enlivening. Before I know you are all waiting for the third example, and I will get there. But first, an important reminder and take-home message. Good education, remember, rattles both, student and teacher. And it requires allowing me to be rattled along with my students. Does it always require new resources? Not necessarily. But it does require a willingness to change course, if you will. Good teaching, good learning environments require that we rethink what we are doing, that we think about what we want for the students to discover intellectually rather than what they should learn. And co-creating these programs opened my eyes. It gave me the ability to see that I had missed many opportunities to rattle. It gave me the push to continue evolving along with the students and developing my instructional approach. Truly the last example. For years, we oriented in biology our freshmen and new transfer students by talking about the need to own one's education, to learn about the opportunities on campus. It was very ironic that we told students, who were of course comfortably sitting and as they were taught since kindergarten, quietly, passively listening, that they needed to become active, reach out to faculty and peers and staff advisors and seek out opportunities. And, you know, we always felt good about after orientation because students told us that our words were so inspiring. But when I really started to listen to what they said next, I heard that they were intimidated and frightened. Why? I had asked them to leave their comfort zone without first practicing those experiences. For years, this, like other rattle opportunities, had been hidden in plain sight, and I was unable to see them because I had lived by the very narrow-minded, comfortable notion that education is what happens inside the classroom. How did we respond? How did we incorporate facts of good education into orientation? we created an explore-orientation. We still meet in the ballroom prize center. We are really lots of biology students, but there's no place to sit, making students literally feel that education is not a spectator game. We ask students to share hopes, fears, and expectations, and we ask them to write on sticky notes and ask them to write those on sticky notes and post them on the whiteboard. And advisors then organize them to identify themes, and then we talk again. And they then experience feeling of being excited, but also confused, sad, somewhat afraid. And we then solicit solution, helping them listen to each other, learn from each other, and work with each other. We set up resource tables in the ballroom, and then we give them specific tasks and challenge them to find the answers themselves. We ask them to form small groups, up to five, which must include at least one person, one student, who none of them had known before. And then as a team, find campus buildings and learn about the resources available by talking to the people in those buildings. Yes, college must be a shake table with big rattles and small rattles. And this last example is a very small one, but it is contributing to building students' courage to leave their comfort zone. And clearly, the title for this talk was, you can either call it incomplete or wrong. Rather than focusing on rattling students to prepare them for good life, it should have read, college has a shake table, why rattled students are better prepared for good life, and rattled instructors become student-centered instructional innovators. So let me conclude with the voices of the students and their reactions to the instructional approach I've described. You know those classes where everyone complains about the final goes way beyond the scope of the class? That's real life. Might well be ready. I had envisioned that I would get my bachelor's degree in electrical and computer engineering and simply work at one of the local companies. Although I had an amazing internship at Qualcomm my junior year, I now have the desire for something more. I want to impact the world, not just have a comfortable job. With these experiences I've shared tonight and many others under my belt, my eyes truly have been opened, and my life as a teacher, intellectually and personally, is better for it. And it is a good life. Thank you all for listening.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.